Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Katie Weaver and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Samled Intavong of Atapeu Province, Laos, was trying to get his family into a boat when a building hit his house. A dam had collapsed several kilometers away, and water was speeding toward Atapeu, pulling down buildings along its path. Floating in the water in the middle of the night, Intavong watched as his house collapsed with his grandparents trapped inside. "My grandparents couldn't move. They died in the house," he said. He spoke at a rescue center, to which he arrived with his family and few possessions. Among those possessions was a photograph of his grandmother. As his house collapsed, Intavong's boat hit his sister's house, which sat next to his. There he, his wife, and his three children climbed onto the roof. But the floodwaters kept rising to more than 10 meters, and then his sister's home was gone too. He said, "At 2 o'clock in the morning, I was looking around the neighborhood. People were crying, and the water was over the whole village. All the houses were gone. Some people were holding on to trees. Some people were holding on to power poles." Intavong and his family moved to the steel structure and held on firmly. Violent waves crashed beneath them. It was hours before a rescue boat arrived.
13 villages were flooded and destroyed in Atapeu Province. The dam that broke July 23rd was part of the Sepien Senamnoi Hydropower Complex. The water moved with such force that it caused the evacuation of a town more than 100 kilometers away in Cambodia. Lieutenant Colonel Kamsuk Kamluangtep led the rescue team that saved Intavong's family and more than 1,500 other people. The officer said, "I am really upset about this, and I've been working from the beginning until now without stopping, and I'm very happy to be helping the people." There are more than 6,500 survivors in shelters at 5 rescue bases, the local government says. In total, officials say 7,095 people have been displaced in Laos. State media report 35 dead and 99 missing. The survivors are experiencing a mix of feelings: anger, severe shock, and extreme tiredness. Somay Kiosavan is a 60-year-old man from Ban Mai Village. He said SKENC, which operates the dam, had told the village a large amount of water would be released. But Kiosavan said the South Korean company did not warn of a possible collapse. "When the water came, it came quick, like a tsunami, and people were scared," he said, describing the first wave as at least 1 meter high. He said the floodwaters destroyed 95% of the homes in the village. SKENC, which is building the dam jointly with PNPC, refused several requests for an explanation or statement. But the Laos government said this week SKENC's careless construction was likely the reason for the collapse. The government also announced inspections of about 50 hydropower projects before any more are approved. Conservation groups have long criticized the Laotian government's plan to use hydropower to turn Laos into the battery of Asia.
Ban Mai and the village of Kokong are destroyed. Along the road that connects them, the fields are filled with water. This year's harvest disappeared with the flood. Those who still have houses returned to look through the wreckage for objects to save. Sovam Peng, a 38-year-old shopkeeper, was among the lucky few. She said, "After spending the second night on the roof, I moved to Bombok Village, and somebody came to steal from my shop in the evening by entering from the roof." Sovam Peng said she and her husband felt they had to protect the little they had left. So they returned to their house in Kokong and slept on its roof. "I'm feeling very sad as I just bought new supplies for my shop and I lost everything," she said. Back at the rescue center, Intavong and other survivors wait to find out what the government will do for them.
One American university is putting electronic voice-controlled assistants in every student housing room on campus. St. Louis University recently announced it will equip every student living space with Amazon's Alexa system. The school in St. Louis, Missouri, will place about 2,300 Echo Dot smart devices in all student dorms and other university housing. Officials said the university will be the first in the world to put the devices in every student living space. The devices and the Alexa service are being provided at no costs to students. The Amazon Echo is a speaker with the ability to listen and talk to users and can perform some operations. The Alexa Assistant competes with similar systems made by Google and Apple. Devices linked to the systems have become increasingly popular in homes in recent years. They can be used for things like looking up information, playing music, ordering food, or buying things on the internet. The devices can also complete actions in the home. These include turning lights on and off and controlling systems for heating and cooling and security. Amazon calls these different tasks Alexa can perform skills. Amazon said in a website post that St. Louis University chose the Alexa system after carrying out a test program. The program involved the Echo Dot and a device from a competing company. It said the students had a better reaction to the Alexa system. The Echo Dots will include a special skill developed especially for St. Louis University. It will provide information and answer questions about local school activities and campus life. Next year, the university plans to add more personalized skills, such as providing information about classes and grades. The university said it did not increase student tuition to pay for the project. Instead, officials said it was financed through the school's general fund, as well as partnerships with Amazon and N-Powered. The company, based in Los Angeles, California, helped develop the parts of the system that are related to St. Louis University. David Hackinson is St. Louis University's vice president and chief information officer. In announcing the project, he said it will fit well with students who are highly driven to achieve success in and out of the classroom. He added, "Every minute we can save our students from having to search for the information they need online is another minute that they can spend focused on what matters most, their education." While the devices are being placed in every university housing space, students do not have to use them. For those wishing not to take part, the school suggests students just remove the devices from their rooms and put them away in a safe place. Other universities have also experimented with voice-controlled assistants in student living areas. A year ago, Arizona State University announced a program that provided Echo Dot devices to a special housing area for engineering students. In the program, all engineering students moving into the special housing community were given the choice of receiving an Echo Dot if they wanted one. As is the case at St. Louis University, Arizona State students are able to use the system to get the latest information on university programs and events. However, the Arizona students also have the chance to sign up for classes that teach subjects related specifically to creating new uses for Alexa devices. Octavio Heredia is a director with Arizona State's Fulton Schools of Engineering. He said he thinks it is a good idea for students to get as much experience as possible with the voice assistants to improve their development skills and prepare for future jobs. Once they are familiar with the devices, they are going to want to further develop their own skills and begin integrating that technology, the hardware, and the skills into other projects, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. 1968 was a presidential election year in the United States. It was also one of the saddest and most difficult years in modern American history. The nation was divided by often violent disputes about civil rights and the war in Vietnam. President Lyndon Johnson had helped win major civil rights legislation, yet he had also greatly expanded American involvement in the war in Vietnam. By early 1968, it was almost impossible for him to leave the White House without facing anti-war protesters. Johnson wanted to seek another four-year term as president, but his popularity kept dropping as the war continued. He understood that he no longer had the support of a majority of the people. In March, he announced that he would not be a candidate.
I shall not seek, and I will not accept, the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
One reason Johnson decided not to seek re-election was a senator from Minnesota, Eugene McCarthy.
I intend to enter the Democratic primaries in four states, Wisconsin, Oregon, California, and Nebraska. The decision with reference to Massachusetts and also New Hampshire will be made within the next two or three weeks.
McCarthy competed against Johnson in several primary elections. Primaries are held before the political parties hold their presidential nominating conventions. Thousands of college students helped the McCarthy campaign in New Hampshire, the state that traditionally holds the nation's first primary. They told voters that their candidate would try to end the war.
My decision to challenge the president's position and the administration's position has been strengthened by recent announcements out of the administration, the evident intention to escalate and to intensify the war in Vietnam, and on the other hand, the absence of any positive indications or suggestions for a compromise or for a negotiated political settlement.
Johnson won the New Hampshire primary, but McCarthy received almost 42% of the vote. After McCarthy's success, Senator Robert Kennedy of New York decided to enter the campaign. He was a brother of President John Kennedy, who had been murdered in 1963. Robert Kennedy had served in his brother's administration as Attorney General, the nation's highest law enforcement officer. Many people were pleased when Robert Kennedy announced his decision. They liked his message. He said, "I run to seek new policies, policies to end the bloodshed in Vietnam and in our cities, policies to close the gaps that now exist between black and white, between rich and poor, between young and old, in this country and around the rest of the world." On April 4, 1968, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Robert Kennedy informed a largely black audience in Indianapolis, Indiana, of King's death and appealed for calm.
What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, and a feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black.
No words, however, could calm the anger in many black communities. Martin Luther King had peacefully led the civil rights movement. His assassination led to violence in more than 100 cities across America. Hundreds of people were killed or injured. National Guard troops were used to help police end the riots. After the riots, another candidate decided to join the campaign for the Democratic presidential nomination. The new candidate was Vice President Hubert Humphrey. The primary season continued. Eugene McCarthy and Robert Kennedy tried to show voters how different they were. Many voters, however, saw little difference between their positions on major issues. Both men opposed the war in Vietnam. Both supported social reforms and civil rights. Kennedy defeated McCarthy in the primaries of Indiana and Nebraska. McCarthy defeated Kennedy in Oregon. The next big primary was in California. Kennedy said he would withdraw from the campaign if he did not win the primary in that important state. Robert Kennedy won the California primary.
My thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there.
He might have gone on to win his party's nomination for president, and perhaps he might have even won the presidency, just like his brother, John. But Americans would never know.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible? Is that possible? Senator Kennedy has been shot. Possibly shot in the head. I am right here. Rayford Johnson has a hold of a man who apparently has fired the shot. He has fired the shot. He still has the gun. The gun is pointed at me right at this moment.
Robert Kennedy was shot at the Los Angeles hotel where he had just given his victory speech after the California primary. He died a few hours later. The man who shot him worked at the hotel. Sirhan Sirhan was a Palestinian refugee. He said he blamed Robert Kennedy for the problems of the Palestinians. America's two major political parties held their nominating conventions in the summer of 1968. The Republicans met first. They gathered in Miami Beach, Florida, and it was soon clear which candidate had the most support. Richard Nixon had been the Republican nominee in 1960. He lost to John Kennedy. 8 years later, Nixon was a strong candidate to win the nomination again. The other candidates were Ronald Reagan, the governor of California, and Nelson Rockefeller, the governor of New York. On the first ballot, Nixon received more than twice as many votes as Rockefeller. Reagan was far behind. Most of the delegates then gave their support to Nixon, and he accepted the nomination. Spiro Agnew, the governor of Maryland, became the nominee for vice president. The Democratic convention was very different from the Republican one. The Democrats were the party in power. Protests against the war in Vietnam were aimed at them. Thousands of anti-war protesters gathered in Chicago, where the Democratic Convention took place. The city's mayor, Richard Daley, ordered the police to deal with them severely. Many of the young protesters were beaten. The federal government later ordered an investigation. The report said the riots in Chicago were a result of the actions of the police themselves. Inside the convention building, the delegates voted for their nominee. They did not choose the candidate who had done so well in the early primaries, Eugene McCarthy. Instead, they chose the more traditional candidate, Hubert Humphrey.
Surely we have now learned the lesson that violence breeds counterviolence, and it cannot be condoned, whatever the source.
The vice presidential candidate was Edmund Muskie, a senator from Maine. In the general election campaign, Nixon and Humphrey both supported American involvement in Vietnam. But both of them also talked about finding ways to end the conflict. And they talked about finding ways to end the social unrest in the United States. Many voters saw little difference between the two candidates. A third candidate in the race was the governor of Alabama, George Wallace. As governor, Wallace opposed federal efforts to end racial separation in the South. He attempted to block the court-ordered registration of two black students at the University of Alabama in 1963. At that time, the university accepted only white students. The two were later admitted under federal protection. Wallace campaigned as the candidate of the American Independent Party. He denounced the federal courts, as well as communism and what he called the Eastern establishment in the United States. Many conservative, working-class Americans agreed with him and supported his campaign. About 6 weeks before Election Day, public opinion surveys showed that Nixon and Humphrey were very close. Nixon's major problem was his past. He had made enemies during his early political life. Humphrey's major problem was his current job as vice president to an increasingly unpopular president. About a month before the election, Humphrey said the United States would halt bombing in North Vietnam. But President Johnson did not give the order until 4 days before the election. Humphrey later said the delay had damaged his campaign beyond repair. On Election Day, Richard Nixon won, but not by much in the popular vote. George Wallace won 5 states and finished a distant third. Nixon would become president. It was a job he had wanted for a long time.
I saw many signs in this campaign. Some of them were not friendly. Some were very friendly. But the one that touched me the most was one that I saw in Dexter, Ohio, at the end of a long day of whistle stopping. A teenager held up a sign, "Bring us together." And that will be the great objective of this administration at the outset, to bring the American people together.
And it was a presidency that would change America and the world for years to come.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.